Okay, everyone. Let's see if we can get into an on-time start here, because I am officially one of the most unpopular people at the entire conference, because I am standing between your good selves and a beer, and we all know that that's wrong. So we're going to try and get this done reasonably quickly. We'll see if we can get you out of there just a little bit earlier so you can start hitting the booze and start enjoying yourself for the night. G'day everyone, welcome to Windows to Go Overview. My name's Andrew McMurray. I am a technical evangelist for Microsoft working out of Australia. And today what we're going to do is take you through a bit of a tour of what Windows to Go gives us, why we came up with the idea of Windows to Go, why it becomes important for your business, what are we doing around things like mobility, free seating, and also what we're doing around security issues associated with the idea of taking your entire SOE and dumping it down to a USB stick and basically plugging it into wherever you like and using it as your main machine. So before we get started, it wouldn't be one of our presentations without some marketing rubbish. They made me do this sort of thing, so we're going to do it anyway. Really what we're talking about here is this whole concept that we've seen building up over the last few years of the bring your own device mentality or the digital native mentality. And the way that people are working these days is changing quite considerably. The typical 9-to-5 day is becoming less and less common, and more work's being done off-site from your main work environment, potentially at customer sites or partner sites. And a lot of people are now starting to work odd hours as well. So not necessarily working from the office, but potentially large periods of time at home. And this is sort of leading to that whole work-life balance thing, or potentially giving us the ability to work at home, the work-work balance thing. I don't know if you've heard of that one, but that's the logical progression of the work-life balance thing. And we're seeing a lot of people now that are bringing their own unique way of working to work. And a lot of workplaces are actually starting to embrace that concept of allow the user to use the device they feel most productive with. And that whole concept of the IT department being completely in control of the makes and models of hardware that are bought and completely in control of what software is on them is starting to become a little bit outdated. Lots of people now want that ability to be given a certain amount of money by the organisation to go and buy their own device, bring that device to work, work as they need to, and also work at home with that device. So we need to really move with the times and provide a way for IT to give the end user a lockdown environment that we can be sure matches our requirements, whilst allowing them to use a machine that matches their requirements. We also have that continual issue of contingent staff, contractors that come onto your site for a certain period of time, that potentially bring their own hardware and may, quite conceivably, end up with your IP on that particular piece of hardware when they leave the contract. How do we start dealing with that? How do we make sure we don't leave anything on those machines that shouldn't be there? So really what we're talking about is there's a problem with our current mobility solutions. The problem with our current mobility solutions, things like VDI, things like remote desktop services, are effective in giving us the ability to provide a work environment to an end user on a device of their choice. But the problem with this is that they can be costly. Now, VDI as a way of providing a desktop is a very costly option. Remote desktop, maybe not so much. But a lot of these different solutions currently can require a fair bit of high bandwidth connectivity. So what we want to do is we want to take that concept of giving the user a environment that they can personalize but is controlled by IT on any device that they happen to be using that is capable of running Windows 8. Hence Windows to Go. So the whole concept of Windows to Go is we take your corporate SOE and we make it portable. We make it portable by putting it onto a USB stick, we take that USB stick and we boot compliant hardware with that stick, giving us IT's environment on the end user's type of machine. So how do we normally do things today? What we normally do today is we boot to the OS installed on the local hard drive, and we get managed by the various management systems in place in the organisation. So as you can see here, we've got an example of a machine that's booted up. The systems management toolset might be providing certain types of applications. Let's just call that systems management toolset configuration manager as an example, because, I wasn't going to say anything else. And perhaps we're also providing some applications down to that device through a virtualization solution such as AppV. We might also be using folder redirection to take the user's environment and put that onto a server somewhere so that we can update that, bring that down to other machines as we go along. But at the moment, the standard way we're doing things is doing it all from the internal hard drive of the machine. And at the end of the day, the user's environment is pretty much stuck to that machine. Now, in a scenario where the user is bringing their own device to work, booting off that internal hard drive of their own device, then there's a whole bunch of problems that start arising for IT. Do they have appropriate antivirus software? Do we now have to put some of our agentry onto their machine? Do we now have to worry about polluting their machine with our applications? And how do we effectively handle that when it comes to reporting it for licensing purposes? So there's a lot of issues and a lot of complexity around allowing end users to do this. So Windows to Go is all about bringing the power of Windows itself into a small form factor, effectively being the USB device. Now the USB device can boot any certified Windows 7 or Windows 8 capable device into the SOE contained on the USB stick. It completely offlines the local hard drive. And the benefit of this is the end user can effectively bring their own machine to the environment. We provide a corporate environment that's totally controlled by us. We boot their machine, we remove their hard drive from the equation. They don't pollute us, we don't pollute them. Now the benefit of this is if the end user goes outside of the environment, let's say to their house where they've got that beautiful pot plant, we can go ahead, that's how we figure out that they're not at work anymore because they've got a pot plant and we don't. They also don't have a false ceiling at home, and we presumably do. Now, once they get home, they can boot whatever piece of hardware they have at home through their USB stick as well, and through a bunch of, you know, standard capabilities that we have in the operating system, things like direct access, so on and so forth, can continue to access their work resources whilst they're at home, all through this USB stick. Now, of course, the first question that comes up is, whoa, security, I've got a USB stick, I'm going to leave it somewhere. Yeah, you might. That's all right, because we can BitLocker that USB stick as well. So we build in a whole bunch of security features into Windows to Go to make it a truly portable experience. So what do we get in terms of benefits here? Firstly, it's a consistent Windows 8 experience. We build our SOE. We deploy our SOE to a whole bunch of pieces of hardware, but we also deploy that SOE to a USB stick. It is in every way, shape and form exactly the same SOE that may be being pre-installed on real hardware. The end user works in their environment, they save things to their desktop, they do whatever they're going to do, and when they go to the next piece of hardware and boot it, they still maintain their standard environment. It works online or offline. This is a real benefit here that we have over things that require a network, such as RDS or VDI. The user goes home, they might not be connected to an internet connection, but they boot their machine from that device, they continue to work on the documents that may be stored there. If they're online, they can continue to do the same thing as well. It's easy to use and personalise. It is not difficult for the average user to plug a USB stick into a machine and hit the power button. Honest. Well, is that true or not? Yeah, it's a bit iffy, isn't it? Hands up, those of you that trust your end users to spell their own name. I've got one person. Actually, used to work for Lonely Planet, you know, the guys that made the travel guides. And this is a long time ago. We used to have this standard account that we used to use to connect to people's machines during periods of maintenance. We had to go and work on the desktop at night. Just this standard account called Tech. You could guarantee, it's always happened on Wednesday night, you could guarantee on Thursday, you get a whole bunch of calls to the help desk for people who couldn't log in. Yeah, what does it say on the screen, mate? It says Tech. Is your name Tech? No. We actually did have a guy called Tech, which was, wasn't spelled T-E-C-H though, but you get where I'm going. Local data is protected, contained on the USB stick. USB stick can be BitLockered, and it's easy to deploy and manage because one of the things we wanted to do with Windows to Go is not have to make you learn an entire new process in order to get this done. We need to be able to slot into the standard deployment processes that we've already built into the OS and built into the tools that go around that. And that's really important to us, and we'll talk more about that a little bit later. So it's a cost-effective and a lightweight solution, and it's really designed for four main areas. The first one is travelling light. Travelling light. Okay, quick show of hands. How many of you have got more than two devices with you? Yeah. It's a shocker, isn't it? Yeah, you might have a smartphone, you might have a tablet, you might have a couple of laptops, maybe you got your own one, maybe you got your work one, and it sucks. Who had to go through an airport to get here? That sucks hard, doesn't it? Because what happens? You've got to go through the line. That isn't no fun anymore because remember, you can't get away with leaving the tablet in the bag. Oh, no. And who's lucky enough to have one of those backpacks that is TSA approved? Anyone got a backpack that's TSA approved? Those of you that don't know what a TSA approved backpack is, it's a backpack that folds out in half. So what you can do is you can stick your laptop in a particular section of the bag, and that allows you to put it through the X-ray machine. Only in America, of course. Now, the really sad thing about that is my wife got really excited and bought me one of these for my birthday. I'm like, thanks, but it only works in the US. Oh well, maybe we'll get ahead of the times at some point and allow that. But this is a real problem, right? No one is going to ask you to stick this in the little tray. So what you can do effectively by taking out a Windows to Go solution is you can remove potentially one of those devices from the equation. So allowing us to just bring the stick with us, get to the work environment, boot the other machine we've got, or potentially some other machine sitting out there in our work environment from that stick. Second one, bring your own device. When people bring their own devices, generally speaking, there are two opposing forces at work. If I bring my own device to my place of work, I don't want you as IT touching it. I don't want you putting an agent on my machine. I don't want you knowing that my machine has all my personal tax documents on it. You thought I was going to say something else. And I don't want you knowing that I'm a sad, lonely World of Warcraft player by you basically inventorying the fact that I've got the WoW client on my machine. And I did get the call from MSIT recently about that, unfortunately. But conversely, it goes the other way. You don't want your users bringing some disgusting piece of hardware into the environment that you know nothing about. You don't want your end user infecting your entire environment with some brand new virus because they thought that that thing that came with their system a year later would continue to work when they didn't pay the subscription fee. Who's got parents that say, I get really sick of insert virus vendor name here message coming up every time I start up my computer saying that I'm not protected anymore? Right. You don't know what state that machine's going to be in when it hits your environment. So by being able to provide a Windows to Go workspace, you are effectively giving them a corporate managed environment that will run on any piece of hardware that they bring with them so long as it's certified to run Windows 7 or Windows 8. So you get peace of mind and they get peace of mind as well. You don't pollute them, they don't pollute you. The next one's contingent staff. It's another big area that we're looking at here. Security for the corporation is important to us. Security for the environment is important to us. And when a contingent staff member brings their own laptop from their own company into your environment, we have all of those issues that we worry about before with bring your own device. But the other thing we really worry about with those contractor PCs is as they go through their contract period, they are most likely going to have some files with some intellectual property on it from your organisation on their laptop. Now, when the contractor leaves your environment, are you absolutely certain that they've taken every piece of IP off that machine that may belong to you? You don't know. So by being able to provide them a Windows to Go environment and have them turn it back into you when they finish off their contract, then you've got a little bit more peace of mind. And then lastly, free seating. So free seating is important to us because if we have a work environment where essentially we have nothing but hot desks, what we can do is we can still provide the end user a full Windows 8 environment that is completely customizable in every way without necessarily having to build and spend large amounts of money by building up a costly infrastructure such as a VDI environment or come up with some way of making sure their environment remains the same inside an RDS session as well. Basically what happens is the user comes in, boots the USB stick from the hot desk, they've got their environment. And it's also helpful in terms of those environments where you've got a lot of equipment being moved in and out of somewhere quickly. And you'll notice on the screen we've got the happy smiling soldier there who's wrapped because he has Windows to Go. Because he no longer needs to worry about the potential of being blown up while he's trying to stuff his laptop into his backpack as he's bumping out of wherever he is. So, you know, we've got some real benefits there. So in terms of the main capabilities that we're going to concentrate on the rest of this presentation, security, ease of use, manageability. That's what we're really worried about when it comes to Windows to Go. So first thing I want to talk about is security in terms of protecting your corporate data. One of the big ticket items we get a lot about is, you know, okay, we're going to take that whole environment, we're going to stick it on a USB stick, it's not secure because you're going to lose the USB stick, someone's going to capture all the information. First thing you need to be aware of is that we do support BitLocker Drive encryption with Windows to Go and Windows 8. Basically, what we do is we've added a new password key protector to Windows 8, and essentially we require a pre-OS password to unlock the drive before we actually boot into the OS on that drive. Now, this is important to us because we can't go ahead and use a TPM on the hardware. Why can't we use a TPM? Because we are potentially moving between different types of hardware, and the TPM is locked to that hardware. So we still need to be able to provide you with a way to encrypt the drive. We do it through that pre-OS password. Now, the benefit of this is that we have full capability with every other security aspect of Windows 8. So this also works with Trusted Boot. We won't think of this as a full, no-compromise OS environment that we've stuffed into a USB form factor to make it easy to get around and easy to boot other environments. So if you've seen some information about Trusted Boot this week and you're worried about support for things like ELAM, early loading, anti-malware, we have full support for that within the Windows CO environment as well. Data leakage is another thing we need to worry about. One of the things we don't want you doing is accidentally polluting the internal hard drive of the machine you've booted to with the stuff that's on your Windows to Go stick and vice versa as well. So when you boot Windows to Go, we separate out the local hard drive on the machine from the USB environment as well. We don't want you accidentally transferring data from one spot to the other. So the way we do this is we offline the local drive through a SAN 4 policy inside Windows 8, and all internal hard drive devices just disappear, or essentially disappear, from the end user's environment. Anyone that's got half a clue with IT knows that they can go into disk management and see these disks in an offline state, but hopefully they don't. Hopefully they don't have administrative privileges to do that. Of course, if they do have administrative privileges, sure, we can open up computer management, we can go and see the offline disks, we can bring them online, and we can start playing around with them if we really need to. The other benefit, though, that we get here for hiding that local drive is we do make sure that any other external drives they plug in are still seen by the OS. So the only thing that the OS doesn't see are the internal hard drives of that machine. Now, as I said before, if you really want to, you can override this behavior with group policy, or if you're an administrator, you can override that behavior as well by going into disk management. So don't think for a moment that we are forcing you down a certain path. If you've decided, hey, you know what, I want them to play with those internal hard drives, go for it. Good luck with that. That could come out bad. But we will allow you to do it if you want to. And I'll sort of show you an example of that in the first demo I do fairly soon. Beg your pardon? The other way around, hiding the C drive of the Windows to Go machine from the operating system? No. Yeah, when you boot off, so the question is, what about the other way around? So if I boot up my machine and I stick the memory stick in, what happens? You don't see anything. So we hide that from you as well. If it's a Windows to Go stick, we don't show it up. When we boot off it, we do see it. So what I want to do now is do a little bit of a demo, if I can remember what button I've got to press. And like all standard traditional Microsoft demos, I know why you're here. You're not here to know about your Windows to Go. You want to see the demo fail. There's nothing more satisfying than seeing the Microsoft dude up on stage sweat. And I'd love to say that this is absolutely foolproof, but just before I came on stage, the Samsung I've got up there decided that it was going to blue screen on me, and I'm hoping it's not going to do that right now. But anyway, what you can see here is my beautiful Windows 7 environment. This is mine. This is the one I have at home. This doesn't have WoW on it. I wouldn't bother trying to run it on this particular piece of hardware. I've got a better piece of hardware for that. As you can see, it is running Windows 7. Now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to take this stick and I'm going to boot off this stick instead into my corporate environment. Now, unfortunately, when I do that, I can't project that restart on the screen. So, we're going to have to do it the hard way. And what we're going to do is I'm going to show you how it goes. All right. Actually, before I do that, I want to do a nothing up my sleeve, bullwinkle type thing. And just very quickly show you my computer. Here it is. As you can see, I've got a C drive. I've got a Q drive as well, because I've got an AppV client on there. And then as you can see, I'm one of those people that whenever you give them a hard drive, I absolutely have to fill it to bursting point with stuff that I probably don't need. Now, what we're going to do is we're just going to shut this thing down, like so. And we're going to boot off the USB stick. Let's put that down. It's USB 3. You don't want to do it with USB 2. You can, but you don't want to, trust me. All right, we're plugged in. We're ready to go. We're going to hit, and I'll talk more about USB and so on and so forth in a moment. We're going to turn the machine on. Sorry, up the back. Sorry, up the front as well with those lights, if we can just sort of kill those lights for a sec. And look at that. I actually got a clap. Fantastic. All right. Now, while that boots, what we're going to do is we're going to plug the projector back in. And you'll have to wait for me to duplicate it. So I'm going to log on now. Oh, good. It's come up. And here's my environment. Fantastic. Got myself a game. Got myself everything I'm ready to do. So what I'm going to do now is just quickly jump in here just to show you something. And go to a computer like so. As you can see, Q drive's not there. Local hard drive's not there. Right? We've offlined that straight away. If we just go and bring up disk management, you'll see that we have disk 0, which represents the internal hard drive of the machine that's currently in an offline state. So if I have the right privileges, yes, I can bring it back online or I can do what I need to do through group policy. But as you can see, nothing up my sleeve. We were running Windows 7. We're now running Windows 8 quite happily on this particular piece of hardware. And clap again if you want. Hey! All right. So one of the other things we need to worry about is making this easy to use. And the first thing we've really got to do is make sure that it's easy to boot from USB. Now, not all of your users are savvy enough to figure out how to hit F12 and bring up their boot options when starting their PCs, especially their older ones. So we need to make sure that the experience is as seamless as possible. So what we've done is we've added a feature in Windows 8 called Windows to Go Startup Options. And basically what this does is it allows the end user to quickly change their boot order to allow seamless USB boot. Essentially what we do is we go into Windows 8 and we type Windows to Go Startup Options. Now presumably you would do this helping the user to do this. And bear in mind, this is assuming that they're running Windows 8 on their main PC. We look for Windows to Go Startup Options, we fire that up, and we get a little dialog box. Do you want to automatically boot your PC from a Windows to Go workspace? Now, if we choose yes, what effectively happens here is in a legacy BIOS machine, we redirect the boot sector to the boot sector on the USB drive, and on a UEFI machine, we just do this through the addition of a boot class entry. So essentially what happens is once the end user hits yes, they can quite happily boot that piece of hardware that they're currently sitting in front of from that USB stick without having to worry about mucking around in any esoteric setup utility. The really good thing about this is if the end user, for whatever reason, has BitLocker enabled on their machine and runs this, we change that without affecting the telemetry of the drive and causing it to throw a recovery key error at them. So it's nice and seamless. We just go straight ahead. Now that's great, assuming that the end user's machine that they brought to you was running Windows 8 in the first place. Nice and easy if they're doing that. But you know, for the first few months after release, we're very likely to see people bringing their own Windows 7 devices in. Now, with a Windows 7 machine, the user's basically got to go either to the BIOS boot menu or they've got to change the OS boot order in the OS in order to be able to handle it. Okay? So we make it a hell of a lot easier when it's Windows 8, a little bit of work to do when it's Windows 7. The next thing we need to think about is ease of use in terms of a full fidelity experience. It's absolutely critical that the end users get the exact same Windows 8 experience when they're operating from a USB stick as they would from a standard internal hard drive. And the reason for this is obvious. If an end user comes in and takes this USB stick that you've given them and plugs it into their PC and it boots up into Windows 8 and it's a crap experience, what are they going to do? They're not going to use it. They're going to chuck it away. So we've done a lot of work in making sure that everything basically goes the same. It's full native hardware access on the host machine with the exact same peripheral support as Windows 8, complete touch enabled, complete mouse and keyboard awareness. Basically, the first time they boot their machine into Windows to go, we'll do a full device enumeration and we'll install all of the required drivers for the machine so that it can use all of its available peripherals. And we'll remember that from that point on. So if they go and boot to another machine later on, we'll run that experience again and gather the drivers for that new piece of hardware. If they come back to the old piece of hardware, we won't need to do that a second time. We'll just boot straight into it. The experience is very much like you're installing Windows for the first time. So, for instance, the first time we install Windows, you know, we dump all the files down, we do that first reboot, and then when we come up after that first reboot, we go and enumerate the devices, checking devices, you know. Remember the old days, checking devices, where it went 1%? 2%? 73%? And then you were done. We go through that procedure once, and then we're pretty much good. Now, if we're going to do this, then we need to make sure that the USB devices that we're actually going to use are able to handle the load that a running OS would put on them. And this is where we start talking about the USB 2 versus USB 3 thing. Now, it's worth pointing out, USB 2 can kind of be done, but it's horrid, and you don't want to, and we don't suggest you do. Really, when it comes down to it, we need, firstly, to use a device that's a USB 3 drive that is certified through the Windows 8 hardware certification kit, and essentially is solid-state media with a high random read-write speed capability. Now, the reason for this, and the question we always get is, you know, why can't I use just any old USB 3 drive I find? Why can't I go down to the post office and buy one of those ones for $7? Well, the problem is that most of your standard drives are built for sequential read and write speed, and these types of drives are great for storing your data, and they're great for reading your data, and that's really about it. And those sorts of drives don't really support the high level of IOPS necessary to actually run a full operating system. The US drives we need have to support random and high random read and write speeds, and that's going to give us the IOPS we need. So basically, we need high-quality flash, we need high-quality controllers, and those USBs are never going to be, unfortunately, the cheapest of the bunch. In fact, one of the things that you'll notice in the next slide is right now there are only two USB devices from two vendors that we will support in Windows to go before GA. Once we hit GA, that number will increase. The other thing that's necessary is we need the drive to report as fixed media. And the reason for this is we need to have a system partition on the thing as well as a data partition, and a removable drive is not going to support that effectively. If we go and have a look at the current independent hardware vendors we have out there, right now we have the two. We have the Kingston DT Ultimate 32 gig, which is what I'm booting from. Do not, under any circumstances, get excited on the website by the presence of a DT Ultimate 32 gig G2. Because it don't work. It shows up as a removable disk. Which kind of sucks, because the first time I decided to order one, I went, well, I could go with the normal one, or I could go with the G2. Know what I want? Because it's newer, so it must be better. Nah, it didn't work. So just be aware of that. There are ways to hack the G2 with firmware and stuff like that, but we're not supporting that at the moment. So the DT Ultimate 32 gig on its own. If you go to the TechNet site and have a look at the documentation for Windows to go, there are links to the two websites where you can purchase them, which is great if you live in the US and not so great if you live anywhere else in the world, because for those of us that live somewhere else in the world from the US, which is pretty much everyone in this room, I suspect, you have to go to either a special link that then tells you to email someone, or you get a mail to link which helps you email someone on the Supertalent site. Kingston aren't quite as easy on you as Supertalent. The Supertalent's the other one. Supertalent USB 3 Express RC8. What I will say is, with these two devices at the moment, they do run hot. Okay, so when you're running them, don't be surprised if the USB key picks up a bit of heat. All right, so let's have a look at that full fidelity experience anyway. So what I'm going to do is I'm just going to go into my environment here and fire up Cut the Rope. And just to give you a bit of an idea, you know, when you're thinking about this, think, what would I expect this to play like if I was running this on a real machine? You know, when you start talking about stuff like Windows to go, people make the natural assumption that it's going to be a hell of a lot of lag because you're actually doing it off an external device. So just to give you a bit of an idea, we're going to play Cut the Rope, simply because it gives me an opportunity to, and I didn't put the WoW client on. And as you can see, this is looking pretty damn good. Find me some lag if you can. And as you can see, I'm a champion at this game. I've done one whole level. So we're going to go to the second level here, and we're going to fire that up. And what do I do? I wish it was a touch. Make it a hell of a lot easier. I'll cut that one. And you beauty, I'm done. No lag whatsoever. So it's effectively... Oh, thank you. Now, the question is, are you clapping this because there was no lag or because I actually managed to finish level 2 in Cut the Rope? I'm not quite sure how excited you are there. And, just anything else I can do in a normal, copy of Windows 8 I can do here. So I can fire up the Finance app. And, I can scroll across. And I can have a look at how the market's going. Look at all these different funds, like stuff that I paid $100 per share. And it's now worth $2. Doing pretty well there. And, I can do other stuff. So I can jump into my desktop environment here. Go into my downloads. Wouldn't be a Windows to go presentation without the marvelous wildlife video, as you can see. Pretty good. Stick that on repeat. And we could watch that all day, couldn't we? Perhaps not. But as you can see, full fidelity experience. So at the end of the day, when you're using these devices, your end users are not going to reject them because they're getting a different experience from what they would have got if they were running on an internal hard drive. Question. So the question is, what am I doing about disk space? Do we have to worry about this sort of stuff because of the propensity for the SXS folder to grow exponentially in patching and so on and so forth? Just remember, this is a Windows OS in every way, shape and form. Everything you worry about on dedicated hardware, you worry about on this USB stick as well. So if I'm going to buy a 32 gig stick, we need to make sure we've got processes in place to make sure that we don't bust the size of the hard drive. Now what we're seeing now is with these two hardware providers as it is, they are bringing out higher and larger range sticks. You would use your standard systems management tools to make sure you were keeping an eye on all of this, absolutely. All right. So in terms of ease of use, we have to worry about what happens when the end user pulls the stick out halfway through their environment. Now, this is a feature that I like to call moron in charge mode. So this is where the end user hasn't quite got the hang of the fact that they're dependent on this little thing sticking out the side of their machine to actually run. So what actually happens when we remove that from the host device? Well, if you've looked at other types of OSs on a stick, you'll probably have noticed that if you do rip the stick, everything turns to poo and we're in real trouble. We do something a little bit different. If someone rips the stick out of the device, effectively rips the guts out of the OS, the first thing we will do is we will detect that the USB has been removed and we will freeze completely. We'll just stop. We won't lose any of the memory or anything like that. We will freeze the OS in place as soon as we detect that the USB device has been removed, and we detect this through the USB stack. We will then give you 60 seconds to get your life back into gear and stick that USB stick back in. If you do this within 60 seconds, everything just continues. We're all good. No one's upset. Sure, you've hurt the poor computer a little bit, made it feel a little bit uncomfortable, but it'll get used to that. I'll probably throw you a little message saying, please don't do that again. But you'll be okay. After 60 seconds, we'll just turn the machine off straight away. Now, the question often comes up, why 60 seconds? And believe it or not, this was a bit of a... the time that we looked at was somewhere between 2 minutes and 60 seconds. And we finished on 60 seconds due to feedback that we got off the TAP program. And basically, our opinion is, if you haven't sussed out that something's wrong after you pulled that USB stick within about 60 seconds, you clearly don't care. And the last thing we want to do is leave what could potentially be some sensitive information on that screen for longer than we need to. So we'll kill the machine for security purposes. We don't want to leave it in that frozen state indefinitely. Question. The question is that configurable? Because some users have hand-eye coordination problems. And the answer is, absolutely some users have hand-eye coordination problems. But absolutely not, we don't allow you to change that at all. So that is a fixed time. Which means, you know, obviously if people are going to take this in, and any more questions, if you don't mind, I might just leave until the end, because I've got a little bit more to go through. I'm hoping to give you 15 minutes worth of question time. If we try and, you know, make sure we impress upon people that 60-minute limit, actually, if we impress upon people, don't move the damn stick in the middle of your session, then we should be okay. So, there you go. Forgot about the build there. So just in case anyone didn't get that, he pulled the stick out, he put it back in again, and it kept going. So why don't we just have a look at that one? Now, this is the one demo I hate, and the reason I hate it is because, you know, you just every time you do it, you think, maybe today's going to be the first time it all goes to crap. You know, never happens at home when you're doing your prep. And when I was doing my preparation up in my room last night, I pulled the stick out. And because there's not a lot of room on these Samsungs to get the stick back in, I had an awful lot of trouble getting the stick back into the Samsung. But anyway, as you can see, beautiful full fidelity experience. Don't want you to forget that. Rip the stick. Oh, damn. Now, put the stick back in. Scramble like an idiot, and bang, we're off. And it's gone, oh, it's gone, hang on a minute. That was a teensy bit uncomfortable. Please don't do that again. So this is the moron in charge message. You realise you just ripped the stick out from under me. Please don't do it again. In actual fact, during one of the beta builds, they actually had a very different message. It came up, ouch, don't do that again, with a big sad face. That really hurt, and it was really uncomfortable. And I think obviously there was a little bit of sort of suggestivity in there that clearly wasn't going to make it to release. But anyway, nevertheless, it was, heaps of hilarity was had. All right. So in terms of the next section of ease of use, I want to talk about. We're talking about redefining mobility here. So one of the core tenets of Windows to Go is that concept that you will most likely use this across multiple PCs. And because we're going to do that, we need to make sure that whatever you boot it into, we're going to be able to run just as we would on any other machine. So basically, I've already covered this, but this is a bit of a slide for you. Essentially, if we detect that we've been plugged into a new PC, we'll go through a specialization phase where we enumerate the devices, we throw those drivers down. And we'll identify that computer through characteristics of its firmware, and then we'll store all of that configuration on the USB stick, so the next time you boot from that piece of hardware, it will work. Of course, if you boot from another piece of hardware that's the same model, it will still work without having to specialise. Obviously, doing this is going to cause drivers to be added to the driver store and, you know, potentially extra storage use, so this is something you need to think about when you're going ahead and doing it. The great thing is, too, that it will work across system firmware, so it's not like we're going to say, it'll work on UEFI machines, but it won't work on legacy BIOS machines. It will work right across because we're going to take both sets of those boot components and we're going to stick them on the system partition. What you can't do is boot a 64-bit version of Windows off the 32-bit processor architecture. Are you surprised? No. Good. I thought you were going, damn you, Microsoft, why can't you? Deployment scenarios. One thing we want to impress again is when it comes to deploying Windows to Go, we don't necessarily want you to have to reinvent the wheel when it comes to deployment. So we want you to be able to use all your standard deployment tools. You can use DISM, you can use ImageX, you can use WDS, whatever you need to do. We're going to have a whole bunch of scripts available at launch for targeting multiple drives at once so we can ease large-scale deployment issues. There's even a little utility for deploying one at a time, because that's great if you're being paid by the hour. It works really, really well. Or if you need to do a bit of an evaluation of this, I'll show you that little utility in a moment. Basically, what happens is we script the creation of the multiple drives, and we might do that through a duplicator or a USB hub using the standard tools that we've already got. You give the user the Windows to Go stick, they boot it up, they enable BitLock, they join the domain, you know, whatever they've got to do, we can script that into the first boot procedure as well, and then they're off and running. There is also a user self-provisioning capability that we're going to be introducing into System Center Configuration Manager 2012 SP1. And basically, that we're going to utilise the software catalogue in conjunction with a simple wizard interface type program that will allow the end user to go to the software catalogue, say they want to provision a Windows to Go drive, and it will essentially take them through the entire process, which will basically involve put in the USB stick, hit next, drag down a copy of the Windows 8 image. It'll be a pre-staged media type job, so if we do need to add other applications in, we can do that as well as part of that provisioning process. And then when it's finished, yank the drive, reboot, and you're all good to go. As you can see there. So we can't demonstrate that yet. We will be able to demonstrate that at some point when we go to public beta, but it's something to keep your eye on anyway. Okay. Other things to think about. Use your existing infrastructure for manageability. Remember, this is a standard Windows 8 environment. It just happens to be running off a USB stick. So you can quite happily stick your System Center 2012 Configuration Manager agent onto it. You can quite happily inventory it. It understands when it's a Windows to go drive, so that with SP1 of Configuration Manager, you will be able to detect which of these environments are Windows to go environments and which of them are actual physical PCs. You'll be able to deploy your applications, your patches, your update to it once we support Windows 8 over Configuration Manager. So again, we're not going to say, right, just because you're using this stick, we're going to make you use other tools to manage it. It will all seamlessly go into the one management experience once that management experience is able to support Windows 8. Group policy. Standard, right? You've got group policies in your environment, you apply them to machines, you apply them to users. USB stick's still a machine, you can apply it to the USB stick. Direct access, you betcha. And desktop vert. So anything we support in the desktop environment, in the laptop environment, we support in the Windows to go environment. So you use an app V today, stick it on the USB stick. Who cares? You can put it in. If you're going to start looking at things like user experience virtualization to start taking some of those application settings capabilities and virtualize those, we'll completely support that as well. I guess the major message that we're trying to get across to you is that your organization doesn't need to change the way it does things in order to bring Windows to go in order to embrace it. Now, we also have the Creator tool. This is that tool that allows us to provision one USB stick at a time. Now, we've got this out here for a very good reason. Now, if you're thinking of evaluating this, and who is thinking of evaluating Windows to go, or did you just come here because you had nothing to do before beer? We've got a couple of people. You know that USB stick's going to cost you $75, right? Who is going to evaluate Windows to go? We saw $75 hasn't stopped anyone. Fantastic. All right. It's all good. So basically, this is a little tool that we ship only in Windows 8 Enterprise, obviously because Windows to go requires software assurance. You can't get Windows 8 Enterprise unless you have software assurance on Windows Client. And basically, we've designed it around just evaluating a single instance so that you can decide whether or not you're then going to go ahead with bulk creation. So what we'll do just very quickly is show you what that looks like. I can tell you now, I've been very distracted this whole time because I keep seeing, you know, hordes of wildebeest sweeping majestically through the plains down here while I'm trying to do the rest of it. But anyway, let's get out of there. And what we'll do is we'll just bring up Windows to go here, hit the Windows to go. But and basically, as I said, it's a little simple wizard. It just says, well, what drive do you want? And funnily enough, I can't find one. Well, obviously, because we're currently in there at the moment. If I choose a USB device that is acceptable, it'll move on, ask me to pick a WIM file to put onto that drive, and what it will do is it will completely wipe the drive clean, partition the drive, dump the WIM file onto it, and it will also ask me whether or not I want to BitLocker it and what the password for BitLocker will be. Whole process on my Kingston here generally takes around about 5 minutes to do. And then you're good to go. Just go ahead and boot and try it out and see whether or not you like it. Now, a couple of things. If you've got external hard drives, you know, external USB 3 hard drives that will show up as a fixed disk, you can actually get it to go on them. So if you don't want to, you know, go ahead and spend $75 on one of the approved devices, just get yourself an external drive that reports as a fixed disk and try it out on that. Now, we're not guaranteeing at all you're going to get decent performance, especially if it's a spindle-based thing and not an SSD. But at least you can see how it's working, and off you go. Okay. So just to sort of wrap it up before we open it up for questions, we've got about 15 minutes for questions. As I said, I promise I'll get you out of here on time for your beer. First thing we need to do is we need to think about Windows to go from the IT side of the fence and the user side of the fence. From IT side of the fence, what we need to do is we need to create and deploy the USB sticks. So basically, standard processes that we normally go through, but we need to run the scripts to actually get it onto the USB. So you can use your System Center capabilities. You can use the scripts that we bring out at launch in order to do that. We can use WDS and so on and so forth. Or we can use our Creator tool if we really want to do it the slow way. Obviously, putting all of our applications on there as well. From the user's point of view, they get given a USB stick. We manage that USB stick through our standard management tools once we start booting from it. And of course, we also need to think about the license activation portion of it as well. It is a copy of Windows just like any other. The first time the end user fires it up, they'll be asked to essentially accept an end user license agreement, which basically says this is subject to use rights under software assurance, and it is going to attempt to activate itself. So all of your standard activation issues come up here. You need to be aware of those. You need to worry about how it's going to activate itself. Once it's activated, yeah, we're off and running. The end user can take that home, can take that to the office, can take it to a branch where there's free seating. They can plug it into any machine that's Windows 7 or Windows 8 certified, and it will work. In fact, if you go to the documentation, there's a really nice FAQ file on TechNet for Windows to go. And one of the questions that's in there is, can I boot my Windows XP or Windows Vista machine to Windows to go? And the answer is, if the hardware underneath it will work with Windows 8 or Windows 7, go for it, it'll work. Okay? Just because you've got a little sticker on the machine that says, you know, certified for Windows Vista, if that spec of hardware will run 7 and will run 8, you're pretty much good to go. All right, so in summary, Windows to go is awesome. Use it. Well, we could have gone through the, you know, provides mobility, easy to use, secure and manageable, but you're probably not interested in hearing that. So, hopefully, that's been of use. I absolutely love Windows to go. I'm a bit of a fan of it. I've started using it more and more. At least give it a try. Okay? It's really, really worth it. In terms of related content this week, who went to 201 this morning? Those of you that didn't, you might want to check that out online later on. Also, 204, I'm not quite sure if that one's already happened or not, but if not, definitely check that out. If you're looking for a related certification exam, it is 7687, and I can't tell you whether or not Windows to Go is in that exam. And if you want to check out stuff from me, there's a bit of a blog that I do, which I haven't updated for a little while. Probably should do that. And I'm on Twitter as well, so if anyone wants sort of, you know, some lame attempts at humour, hitting their mobile device, by all means, follow me on Twitter. And with that, we have 12 minutes. So thank you very much, everybody. And if anyone has a question, feel free to yell it out. Thank you.